You are listening to South by Southwest Sessions.
Hello and welcome to Breaking the Sonic Color Line. Today I'm joined with actress, iconic rapper, DJ and philanthropist MC Light, and also with me, veteran of the voice acting industry and VP and co-founder for the Society of Voice Arts and Sciences, Joan Baker. Welcome to you both, and thank you for taking the time to have this really important conversation with us. My
thank
name
you
is
for
Roger
inviting
Gurman.
Us.
Thank you. My name is Roger Gurman. I'm the executive creative director of the SiriusXM, Pandora, and Stitcher group. Now, that's a mouthful. I lead our Studio Resonate team, which is our audio-first creative consultancy. We partner with advertisers to bring their brands to life through audio. Studio Resonate is in a unique position. Over the past 10 years, we've produced over 250,000 audio ads, and those ads hit the ears of about 150 million listeners that we reach in the Pandora, SiriusXM, and Stitcher audience. The advertising industry has a problem. There's a myriad of ways that we perpetuate racism in the way we write our ads, the way we address our audiences, and in the audience space in particular, the voices we engage to bring our brands to life. Most notably, despite the fact that the general market American voice is made up of about 40% people of color, unless an advertiser is specifically targeting a particular non-white audience, we're still often presenting white voices as the default. Why is this? Hopefully we can untangle some of this in our panel today. At Studio Resonate, we're trying to do our part in redefining the advertising industry's notion of the general American voice to better reflect the rich spectrum of voices we hear in our communities. Looking back at the first half of 2020, about 90% of the voice casting requests we received didn't specify a race or ethnicity for voice casting. And in about 93% of those cases, our audio producers cast white voices. Why? It was the default. It was the industry standard, and we didn't challenge it. We didn't want to rock the boat. Now, in the wake of George Floyd's murder and the social uprisings that have followed, all of us have done some evaluation in ways we should be doing better. For us, that started default voice casting. Beginning in June of last year, we implemented a new casting policy that when no race or ethnicity is specified in a client request, again, 90% of those requests, we now cast voices of color at least half of the time. And guess what? Advertisers and audiences didn't bat an eyelash. It really isn't that revolutionary. We just needed that jolt to challenge an outdated way of thinking. But that's just the beginning. There's plenty more to be done by all of us to clean shop and do better. In today's panel, we want to discuss the evolution of voice casting in racial stereotypes in voice casting and the impact of race in audio messaging and how the industry can come together to make some real change. I'm honored to have these two powerful voices in the industry, MC Light and Joan Baker, to join me in for the conversation. So let's dig right in. Joan, I want to start with you. Yes. Can we just give me a little bit of your background on how you actually got into voice work?
Actually, I got into voice work because I could not get arrested on camera. And that is because people would look at me and they wouldn't quite know what to do with me. They would always say, you know, what exactly are you? And in show business, things get put, you get typecast. That's just how things are. You get typecast. And I wasn't someone that you could typecast easy. So, and also being biracial, there is a history of kind of living in the in-between, especially in show business, and not quite, you know, getting cast because you're not quite white, you're not quite black, and no one knows what to do with you, unless it's a very specific kind of role, in which case you can't make a living or you can't create a career around one role. So I got into voiceover because, ironically, you couldn't tell who I was by my voice. You can't necessarily tell I'm black. You can't tell I'm white. You can't tell where I'm from. And that was actually a job requirement in being a successful voice actor, is that you can't tell where the person's from or their background. I got into voiceover about 30 years ago, less than 30 years ago. So yes, the industry has evolved and changed, but I could not get arrested on camera. So I somehow slipped into voiceover without realizing it was even a career, but it was just another way for me to skin the cat and I was pound and determined to get a career in show business.
That's really interesting. Thank you. Yeah. MC Light, can you tell me how you got into your voiceover work?
I have a really good friend, Malcolm Jamal Warner, who does a lot of books and he does a lot of voiceover. And I hit him up in 1997 or so. And I said, hey, can you tell me or share with me your agent? And it was pretty rare because most people don't. they don't share. You can find some people who will share. A large percentage just won't. It's just like really taboo even ask, as a matter of fact.
Exactly.
And I didn't even know any better. I was just like, hey, thank you, agent. And he's so such a beautiful spirit. He was like, right away, he gave it to me. And then when I spoke to the agent, he said, well, why do you want to do voiceover? And I said, well, people tell me I have a nice voice. And he was like, well, that'd be enough. What do you, you know, you got to know how to use it. And I was like, oh yeah. Okay. Well, what's next? He said, well, take this, boot camp that's happening this weekend. And I took it, came by at the end of it. And he talked with the instructor and the instructor said they thought I had a lot of potential. And it just really popped off from there. And I just sank right into a couple of really big campaigns. And, you know, I just booked two commercials, which I've been doing a lot of voiceover and stuff in award shows and ceremonies mm-hmm. and things of that nature. But it was a bit of a lull before I booked another, you know, huge national campaign. And so I just want to say to all of those folks out there that are interested in voiceover and you go into this dark hole, you do this voiceover and you don't know how it's going to come back. You don't know if the people ever heard it. I just say, keep the faith, keep putting forth your best work and know that it'll pay off in the end.
You know, I just want to add to that. And that is, it really is a industry that is behind the scenes. And that's why mm-hmm. most people don't understand how to get into it. Yeah, it's literally behind the mm-hmm. scenes. So most people don't understand how to break in or what's the most powerful way that you can get into the industry, get an agent, and then get work. So there's mm-hmm. actually many ways, but there are powerful ways to do that, whether you're white or black. Mm-hmm. So I just want to say, I want to ride on your coattails there and say it's true, you know, you have to keep the faith. You have to train. You also have to train your voice. Your voice is an instrument. So voiceover is not from the throat up. It's actually a holistic experience.
It really is.
It is.
I'd like to throw this next question to the both of you. What kind of barriers or challenges have you both observed of color within the voice work industry? There might be an assumption sometimes that because As you mentioned, Joan, it's mm-hmm. about working behind the scenes. It's not necessarily about your face or what you look like, but it's definitely right. still part of the casting process. I know voiceover actors often have websites, and there's you know, some will choose to put a picture of themselves on their website. Some will choose not to, for better or for worse. And what other kind of barriers have either of you seen or experienced in progressing within this industry?
Well, I'll add to your website and in voiceover, unless you're famous, right? Unless you're famous, you're going to put your picture on your website, which is fine. It's when you're breaking in or when you are in voiceover and you don't quite yet have clients. People don't put their picture on because producers tend to go to websites and what happens is they'll see someone like me and they go, oh, I really wasn't looking for someone black or I yeah. really wasn't looking for a blonde or, you know, he's not edgy enough. He looks a little nerdy. So you don't put your picture on because you don't want to be typecasted through your voice. So what happens, what producers like is they like to discover your voice. They don't like to be told or shown. So if they're working on a project, they go to your website, they don't see your picture, and they hear your demo reel, all of a sudden you might be the right person for this campaign because there was no visual to go along with it or to tell them how you sound. Because they almost always say, oh, I wasn't looking for black, or I wasn't looking for a blonde, or I wasn't looking for someone, you know, overweight or thin. That's just part of show business too. So you don't want to give them that edge where they're looking at your website and they go, oh, I don't want to hire her. I don't want to hire him. I was looking for something else. And they almost always are. Unless they discover
basically, what you're saying is don't use your face on your profile until you're famous, until you're MC Light.
Unless you're famous. Exactly. Well, they're going to her site. They're going to your site because they want you.
There's that as well. You know, because for some time I was just like, you know what, maybe I won't slate my name because I think it can also act as a hindrance because then people think they know you. Oh, well, I wasn't looking for a hip hop artist for this.
You're right.
I wasn't looking for, you know, someone from Brooklyn with such an accent for this. But I think when the opportunities are given, we're able to, if you are trained, as Joan said, you're able to slip into another, you know, another skin. And I think that's what afforded me the opportunity to do the Emmy Awards last year is because I've worked diligently with the Image Awards. And when they took the production crew in, which they were looking for a diverse production crew, so Reginald Hudlin and his folks went in to do the Emmys this year. They pulled me in to do the VO, and I had to deliver a completely different voice for that particular show. So I
versus BET, right? Versus BET,
right. And I've done BET Awards, and I've also done BET Hip Hop Awards, and those two are very different from one another.
Different,
so it's just varying degrees of street. You know, that urban urban appeal versus, you know, straight laced. But I do think as being MC Light, I too can get pigeonholed into what they think they're going to get. So sometimes I'll a slate that doesn't say MC Light just so that they can rid themselves of the notion of precursor or, you know, to what they think it's going to be.
Yes, so MC Light, I want to focus into what you just said just a little bit around sounding more street or, you know, words used to describe, sometimes you get in voice direction, sound more urban or sound more black or sound, one I've heard recently, use more black scent. That's a new word to me. I have not heard that one before, but I saw that on a recent
wow.
brief. Thoughts around that being used in direction, like, you know, I feel like when it's coming from a place like BET or Hip Hop Awards, I can understand it's a stylistic choice. But that can also be the same words used to describe a character or a voice that could be really in a demeaning way or in a way that makes a voice actor feel really uncomfortable. Share thoughts on that.
I won't say that I've, in my lifetime, I've never received something that documented that on the, you know, the description of what it was that they were looking for. But I can say, honestly, I don't remember. With BET and all of those, they don't have to say it. They already know what they're getting with MC Light. But, and two, I'm sure that my agency acts as a safe haven sort of liaison to pass me things that are right for me, you know, or that they feel are right for me, or that they feel I can accomplish outside of everything that I've done as MC Light. And so I don't remember being urban voice. I can kind of just, I can tell through the copy, okay? I can tell through the, you know, the corporation, the product, what are we working with here? And I can tell through the description of, this is more conversational, this is, and then they ask for the ages, and then they might have black. They don't have black scent, or they don't have, you know, the other day I read for something, and it said heavy. It said a heavy female voice, but then it likened it to Emma Stone and Angela Jolie. But they still had me read for it, but it was a heavy, you know, my voice sits really low. And I imagine their speaking voices sit low as well. So
they sound like lighthearted to me. They sound lighthearted to me. I would totally lighthearted.
Yeah, I think, you know, it just depends. It's just like if I'm in my regular time, this is mm-hmm. my voice. And it right. because I speak from the diaphragm, everybody thinks that when I speak like this, that I'm not feeling well. They go, is everything okay? Everything is fine. Let me tell you something. Everything is so fine. But I'm always speaking from my diaphragm, and I'm always leaning on my cords. So I have to really pay attention to speak in, this would be the natural tone if I weren't so lazy and sat down here with it. So I don't know, maybe amazing. Emma, you know, Emma smoked cigarettes or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Something right. that would give her that raspiness or that lower register that we may not be aware of, because when people are in front of other people, they may use other voices.
That's, you know? That's true. Yeah. A different range speaking, within their voice.
A different range. Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of white voices, Joan, have you ever had to kind of conform the sound of your voice to kind of land opportunities? Have you ever like had to make sure you had a default white voice as part of your repertoire?
Well, I think that I'm not sure if I would interpret it that way. I may interpret it just as a trained voice, not necessarily white or black, but a voice that's trained. In other words, training encompasses breath. As MC Light was saying, diaphragmatic breath, that's something that isn't necessarily natural. It's natural for kids, but at some point that shifts and everything becomes in your chest. So you almost have to relearn how to breathe, especially for voiceover, because the breath is everything to voiceover. So training your voice, it encompasses even speech and diction to a certain degree, because in voiceover, your diction has to be better than the average person. Although when you go to speak, it has to sound natural and not forced or not obvious, right? So I'm not sure if I would interpret it as a white voice as much as I would a trained voice. Now there are issues with people when it comes to trained voices, because I, as a coach and as a teacher, and I've been, you know, training my voice for many, many decades now. So when people come to me, sometimes blacks will come to me and they'll say, if I study, you know, speech and diction, will I lose who I am? Like, in other words, will I lose my sound?
Your authentic
and it's
voice.
Like, exactly. And it's like, no, actually for voiceover, you would be just developing another branch to your tree and you'd be creating another choice depending on the script. But I'm not necessarily thinking white. I'm thinking more trained. So in other words, when you're auditioning for all kinds of brands, and this may now change, but when you're auditioning for all kinds of, you know, global brands, they usually want a voice that's kind of more neutral or standard American speech, although that is changing slowly. And so that's why you would train, is that you would train your vowels, for example. So you wouldn't have issues like there's this one issue called the inversion. When you invert that sound, the I sound to the an sound. So for example, the word anytime, most people would say anytime. And most blacks may say it that way more often than whites. Where you're talking and you say, yeah, anytime, anywhere. You don't hear that on TV. You don't hear that in commercials. So when you study speech and diction,
anytime.
And it's almost like a foreign language, because we're so used to regionalisms that when you become aware and present
like
to
an e.
exactly
it's like an e
they call it the inversion, and it's and so you, this is what you're learning, the voice. When you're learning the voice, you're not necessarily learning it because you're trying to be more white. You're learning it to develop your instrument. And to
I love the tuning and developing your instrument.
Exactly.
I want to ask you, I know in the past several months or so, I think we've observed a shift in the entertainment industry broadly, where particularly in voiceover and particularly with animation and voiceover work, particularly in the animation space, where it was kind of seeing a long overdue shift of the tolerance of white actors voicing non-white roles. Obviously, race, ethnicity, and culture are more complicated than just like checkboxes. In advertising, sometimes I might ask a white copywriter to write an ad in the voice of a black character, or a black copywriter to write an ad in the voice of a Latinx character. Where do you think it's appropriate? Where should we be looking to which people should be allowed to tell which stories?
Well, I think it's definitely powerful to mix, to match racial background to voice, right? And it's notorious in animation world, in the cartoon world, that, you know, they hire a small, you know, small group of white actors that voice all the characters, not necessarily because of blackface, but because they're actually saving money. And in cartoons, people tend to be extraordinarily talented with their voices. That's why they're actually, you know, famous and making $300,000 a week on these shows, is because they can do all kinds of voices for whatever comes up. They tend to have the feeling, the people that are hiring, that their feeling is more like, what's not broken, you don't have to fix. Mm-hmm. That's a huge kind of philosophy in show business. So there's so much money at stake that they usually just tend to go to whites. And because it's in a voiceover industry, no one knows that. There are agents that send out clients for jobs that are, it's a black, you know, background in the character, but they'll send whites because they'll say to the people, no one will know. You can just audition. No one will know. If you book it, who's to know? And these are very white voices.
Right. Hey, the interesting thing, what you just said, I mean, if you have someone who's skilled and just can, you know, he has 5, 6, maybe 11 voices in his wheelhouse, it's like, do you get that white guy that knows how to do all of those things, or do you get the black guy because he's black? I don't know.
Right.
I don't know how
right.
I
it's
sit
hard.
With that. It's like, it's I want hard, someone and... who's skilled, who's going to bring a bunch of things to the table.
And that's notoriously what has cartoons have been, Walt Disney did all the characters to his cartoon voices before it started going out to voice actors. I mean, it's just the way it's been set up. But what I do think is that the thing about being black and being directed, there is definitely an issue. It's not like, it's not the same if I go to France and I learn how to speak French and I learn how to become more or less French. It's like there's this background to blacks that cannot be imitated. And it started with slavery. And it started with the suppression of being black. And when that is the history, you can't direct someone that's white to have this. This is historic. Yeah, right. This is our ancestors. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
So it goes well beyond, you know, I'm going to be a French person. I'm going to, you know, it's not, it's deep in our souls. And that's something that you can't direct out of us. It comes out of us naturally. And it doesn't matter if my voice sounds urban and you can tell I'm black or not. There's plenty of people in voiceover that are dark skinned and they're told they're not black enough in terms of their voices.
I feel like, a lot of this would be a different conversation if this was 50 years down the track. 50 sounds horribly long, but like several years down the track. And we're in a world where the pool of voice actors is more, is equitable and actually looks like the makeup of the country. If it doesn't look like everyone is white and there's a small amount of people of color, once we get to the point where we have, representation across the board, and I don't just mean voice acting, at all levels, as producers, as directors, as managers, as hirers, writers. Then this conversation shifts, and then this conversation, I think, will move into a direction when anyone can start playing anybody. I know we're coming up to the end of our session and we're running out of time. I'd love to continue this conversation. Thank you both so much. This was a really meaningful conversation and needs to be had, and I'd love to continue this. If you enjoyed this and you'd like to continue this conversation, I want you to direct you guys to our newly launched industry initiative, the Stand for Sonic Diversity. We want to make meaningful change in our industry to be more inclusive when it comes to the voices that we hear. Visit us at standforsonicdiversity.com. We're also going to start up a Clubhouse room right after this. please join our Clubhouse room for Society for Sound Thinking, where we'll be talking about this specific subject. So thank you again, both of you, for your time. And I hope everyone had a good time listening to this conversation. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.